Hello and welcome to Out and About in Malovians. I'm your host, Jeremy Balfour. As part of my job as Member of the Scottish Parliament, I get to travel around Malovians, meeting interesting people and hearing about how their companies, charities and projects benefit and contribute to our community. On this podcast, I will share their stories. On today's episode, I'm excited to be talking to Anne Leslie, who is the Chief Executive of LAR. Welcome to Out and About, Anne. I would love if you could start by telling us a bit more about LAR.
Sure. So thank you very much, firstly, for having me. So LAR Housing Trust is a relatively new charity set up by the Scottish Futures Trust in 2015 to build mid-market rent housing across Scotland. So we've been going just about 6 years now, 6.5 years, and we've got 665 houses all across the country, as far apart as Aberdeen, Dunbar, Ayrshire, Glasgow. And we've got 12 sites that are in construction.
I think most of us are aware of housing associations, but you've got the word trust at the end. Is there a difference between a housing association and a housing trust?
Yes, that's right. So LAR is not a housing association, so we're not regulated by the social housing regulator, which means we don't do social housing. We do mid-market housing, which sits in between private rent housing and social housing. So LAR is regulated by OSCAR, the charities regulator, instead of the social housing regulator. And that's really the biggest difference between us.
And do the people that you're renting to, your tenants, do they notice a difference? Is there a difference on your setup, how you work, or is it similar kind of feel to both different organisations?
It's similar in many ways, but LAR is quite nimble. We're able to provide a different sort of housing quite often. So when we rent a property, it comes with white goods, with carpets, with blinds, and we're quite religious on the cleaning and looking after of the developments, as our housing associations actually. But our target tenant group is quite different to social housing. So most of our tenants are in work. The average household income from our tenants is around about £25,000. So they're people on low to medium incomes, who are probably wouldn't be allocated a social housing if they applied for it, but also really struggle with high private rents. But we offer them the same type of security and stability that housing associations do, and that's where we differ from private landlords.
And are the people who are your tenants, roughly how long would they stay with you? Is it some people stay for, you know, been here 5, 6, 7 years, or is it a stepping stone to something else?
So that my answer to that changes every year because we're only 6.5 years old, so it gets longer and longer. But it really varies. We've got a lot of young people who come and with a rent from us. They save money for our deposit and then they leave and buy their own home. We've got other people who've been with us basically since day one. So our turnover is about 15%, less than about 10% per year. So people... For the last year, it's gone up to about 10 years. The year before, it was slightly less because we'd been going for a shorter period of time.
Now, obviously, I'm very interested in Malovians and what work you're doing within Edinburgh and the wider area. You've talked about how you reach across the whole country, but I wonder if you can just tell us a bit about specifically what you're doing within the city and within Lothian generally.
Yep, sure. So we've got a number of properties in Edinburgh already. So I suppose the most exciting one we've done in Edinburgh so far is Westwood House on Gorgie Road. And it was an old commercial property, boarded up, wasn't used. The previous owner tried to let it out, but there was no commercial entity wanting to rent it. So we bought it, took it right the way through planning, and designed it out and built it using a DMB contract with Clarks, and it's now 47 lovely flats. With I know you've been to visit us there already, Jeremy, and beautiful open space. And we're actually in for planning at the moment in their spare car parking ground at the back, so we're in for planning for 11 townhouses there. Because all the flats are 1 and 2 bedroom, we've only got 2 3-bedroom, and we're finding some of our tenants, they have babies, they want bigger properties, so if we can build townhouses in the background, then they can stay within their communities, their roots are there, and they can just pop over and rent a house very close to us. Right next door, in Elphin, we've got 40 properties there, and we are in construction, just broken ground in construction next to the park, about 100 yards away from Westwood House, where we're building 9 flats. So 3 3-bedroom, 3 2-bedroom, 3 1-bedroom. So that's a group of properties in that area. We also have 85 flats in Telford, which we purchased from Edinburgh City Council, so City of Edinburgh Council. And we are in construction in Fountainbridge on a church conversion and new build flats in the ground behind that. So a lot of work in Edinburgh City itself. We also have a fabulous development in Nidri, 6 properties that we did in collaboration with the Health and Social Care Partnership, which were just completed last year, and they're for adults with autism. So really, really nice properties, actually. So loads going on. And then we've got more in the pipeline that are slightly further behind. So we've got one project that is just tremendously exciting. We're going in for planning this week on it, and it is the former naval barracks at Port Edgar. So we're looking to turn that into 49 properties, residential properties, plus there's a prison that we're going to convert, and we'll be putting in a community cafe, a community room, meeting room, hopefully a space for another charity, men's shed, that they're needing a workshop, and then some storage for ourselves. So a really exciting project.
And that's a lot going on, and in a very short period of time, you've obviously invested, you know, lots into these properties.
Yes.
I suppose the obvious question is, you know, does money grow in trees in Dunfermline, or how are you financing all these projects?
Yeah, so LAR's finance is, again, very, very different to housing associations. So LAR was started with a £55 million loan from the Scottish Government, and that's a fixed term 25-year loan at a low interest rate. And to that, we have added £65 million of private finance, financed through the Bank of Scotland by Scottish Widows. So we've got that £120 million pot of money that we have been spending over the course of the last 7 years. And we've 12 sites, as I've said, which are within our ownership that are either sitting with planning or in construction or in the planning process. And that pot of money is what we're using to build our homes.
And is that a model that you can see rolling out and continuing, or is this a point where you will reach a ceiling where you think we've got enough and we'll become more like a housing association, we won't be doing development, but we'll simply become landlords, or is this a model that can continue on?
Well, it's a fantastic model, and it would be really good to see it rolled out more and more frequently. I know the Scottish Government did do one more round of financing, like LARS and Places for People were the entity that got, I think it was £45 million. But it's absolutely fantastic. So for the taxpayer, all our money is loan, all our public money is loan, so it goes back to the taxpayer. They can spend it again and again and again on whatever they want. So all that £55 million that we get from the Scottish Government is repaid with a little bit of interest, not much interest, but a wee bit of interest over the 25 years. So as a model for sustainable building of affordable housing, it's an absolutely fantastic model, and I would encourage everybody to have a look at it, because the houses that we build, our void rate is under 1%. It was 0.26% for the last quarter. So they are clearly homes that are in high demand. We've got lovely tenants. They really take care of their properties. And it's working on a financial basis. So why give money out as grant when you could give it out as loan, get it back in, and then spend it again?
And, I mean, obviously, if I'm a younger person in Edinburgh,
yeah.
And I'm, you know, maybe got my first job, but I'm looking at the renting market within the city, which is really expensive.
Yeah.
How do I get onto your list? Have you a list, and are the criteria, particular criteria, that you're looking to meet?
Yeah, so if we've got a new development that's coming on stream, the way we advertise is all online. So we do it through Open Rent. So if you look at Rightmove, Zoopla, our adverts go on there. Now that we're 6 years old, we actually have a waiting list, or we call it an inquiries list, of over 1,000 people on it. So our properties really are in very high demand. So what I would do is, if you ever see an advert, drop us an email. We'll take you through the application process. And then if you pass all the checks there, then that's if a void comes up, what we do is we email the top 10 people on the list and see who's interested in the property. And we usually get responses absolutely straight back. So far as the criteria, LAR is a charity, so households have to earn below a certain amount in order to qualify. So in Edinburgh, for example, for a two-bedroom, the household income would have to be below £36,000. So that's if you've got two people earning, they're basically two people on living wage and a little bit more, and then, well, a bit less actually, and then that's the maximum threshold. We do have minimum thresholds as well, because you don't want to set somebody up for failure. Our houses are more expensive than social rent. But to give you an example, our cheapest two-bed rent in Edinburgh is £630. Our most expensive is £720 at the moment. So, and the ones that are £720 in the very same building, the private rented ones, are over £1,000. So people are saving generally in Edinburgh about £300 on their rent if I take it across all the developments. So. Other than that, we look at priority criteria. So if you've got a local connection, family in the area, work in the area, then you go up a notch. And we discuss these priority criteria with the local authority before we set them.
Okay. One of the things I found really encouraging was, I think you've got about just over 7% of your tenants have a disability.
The lead tenant, yes.
So again, are these properties specifically designed for disabled people when you're building new ones, or do you adapt ones as people come onto the waiting list?
Mostly we adapt them, but sometimes we do build them. So the development in Nidri was for a specific group of people. So the plasterboard there is three times thicker than plasterboard elsewhere, and the bathrooms are different, the kitchens are slightly different. So we will absolutely build things specifically for disabled people or people with disabilities. We tend to find when we build things, so Westwood House that you visited, all the doors there are wide enough to get a wheelchair through, and we've got a lift. So even though they're not specifically designed for people who are wheelchair users, we do have wheelchair users on the first floor and the second floor. So we try to make sure that our houses are as accessible as possible to as wide a group of people as possible. We have actually, I remember early on, we were building a development in Glasgow, and I saw somebody move in and she was in a wheelchair, and I thought, oh my goodness, that house isn't suitable for somebody with a disability, because it was under the size standards that you would generally expect. So we knocked on the door, gave her the floor plans for the building just next door that we were still building, and asked her if she needed any changes. She made two or three wee changes, and that was it. We built those in, and then she moved from the first property through to the second property when it was built.
Brilliant. Obviously, you have been going a fairly short time, so presumably you had a background before coming into the organisation. So what attracted you into working in more social housing? And just tell us a wee bit about what you were doing before this.
Okay, so I started off life, I suppose, as a painter and plasterer in Canada. After my law degree, I did that for 6 months and then painted and plastered my way around the world, which was brilliant fun, a really good, a good sector to be involved in. Came back to Scotland, finished off my law degree, became a lawyer, but I was always interested in housing. So I spent my career as a lawyer, finished up as a partner in one of Scotland's larger law firms, then took a break to look after my kids, and a job came up at Scottish Futures Trust, and I thought, oh, that sounds quite interesting. So I was put into the housing team, and I suppose with my painting and plastering background, I'd always been interested in houses. So when Scottish Futures Trust actually developed the business case for LAR, so they made the financial model up and all that kind of thing. So I was dropped in as anchor to start LAR up, and wow, I mean, that was quite an experience. So everything from making the coffee, buying the coffee, buying sites, fixing the £65 million loan, doing viewings, doing sign-ups is probably the best part of the job, because people are so thrilled when they get their keys. It's absolutely lovely. So that's my history. It's quite not a usual career path, I suppose, but yeah, I've been here since it started, and it's lovely to see LAR grow.
And obviously we've just come through a really difficult 2-year period with COVID.
Yeah.
We haven't been able to really meet with people. We haven't seen a lot of development taking place because of the restrictions that were there.
Yeah.
Looking back, are there lessons learned there that you might do things differently going forward than you were doing pre-pandemic?
Yes. So for us, meeting our tenants is really important. So that was really hard. It was really hard for our property managers during the pandemic. When it first started, we made sure we did a list of everybody who we thought were vulnerable, older, and we made sure that everybody was phoned on a regular basis, unless they didn't want to call, because as you'll have seen, communities really did pull together. They were absolutely fantastic. So we, for some tenants, we actually got a lot closer to them just because they were getting a regular phone call, but we found it really difficult not to be able to just walk around our developments. So we all walk around, you know, pick up litter, chat to people as we're passing them, and that's a very good way for just the kind of offline chats as to, oh, my boiler was doing this, or it'd be nice if we had more plants in the common hallway or whatever. So you can pick up a lot from tenants if you meet them more regularly. So that was the really hard bit, not being able to meet them. But on the other hand, doing the lease agreements by DocuSign, rather than when people are wanting to move in, they just want the keys and to get going and empty their van, and they don't want to sit and, you know, go through all the legal documents and the lease agreement. So being able to do that in paper beforehand and have it all done electronically is a huge advantage. So that's much, much better. I think the team, because we're based across Scotland as well, we've got an office in Aberdeen, and it really brought our team together, because it didn't feel like an Aberdeen office and a Dunfermline office. It was just everybody was on Teams twice a day at 9 o'clock and at 4 o'clock, and you could, you know, just keep an eye on staff, make sure they were okay, that they weren't suffering too much, because you know, everybody kind of went home with their computer and two screens and a desk if they wanted it, and a chair if they wanted it, and everything else. But it's really difficult if you don't see somebody, just to see if they are actually coping. So it's really nice to have people back in the office now, and we're able to have a laugh and, you know, share experiences and learn from each other.
Clearly, one of the big issues that we're facing in Scotland is homelessness.
Yeah.
and not enough housing of all types across the country. As someone who comes to this fairly new, mm-hmm. is there any optimism that we can deal with a housing issue, that we can deal with homelessness, or is it just going to be a dark hole or a black hole we're going into, or is there light at the end of the tunnel?
I think there's definitely light at the end of the tunnel, and actually I think we're probably halfway along the tunnel. You know, Scotland has done, and housing associations in particular, with their partners in the private sector, have done an amazing job over the last 20, 30 years building really good quality houses, building a lot more social houses, a lot more houses of all sorts of different tenures, actually. So in most areas, there isn't a shortage of housing. There is a huge shortage of housing in places like Edinburgh, which is in such high demand. But it's more the quality we have to keep increasing the quality, so that the houses, so you don't have damp and you don't have mould, and you know our houses are more energy efficient, and when you switch on your heating it's actually warm and it doesn't all leak out through the walls and the ceilings. So I think there's a lot that the sector has done already. I have to say it's a really friendly sector to be a part of. It's, you know, really, I shouldn't say anything about the law. I mean, law's friendly as well, as you might know, but people really help each other out. And I think because people, housing officers, property managers, they're dealing with people, they're dealing with their beneficiaries and their tenants on a day-to-day basis, they get very caught up in their lives and they really want the best for them. So it is a sector that tries to, if it sees a problem, it tries to fix that problem. So it's a great sector to be involved with.
Sadly, our time is nearly gone. So let me finish with a question I always like to finish with, and that's my magic wand. So
yeah.
You've got a magic wand, and you can choose anything, either to help law or to help the tenants, or go together, or change something within the environment you're working in. What would that be?
Well, as I said at the start, we've a £120 million pot of money, and that is spent or allocated. So we are now looking to the future, to what we can do, and I don't want to sell properties. We want to keep our properties because it's a long-term option for tenants. But it would be lovely to have another loan, to have more money. The private sector banks are very keen to lend LAR more money, but we need that cheap public debt to counter the more expensive private debt. So if we got more cheap loan from the government, then we could build more houses, which means we can help more people. So if I was to wave a magic wand, it would be to get more money so that we can help more people.
Well, and Leslie, thank you so much for being with us today, and thank you for the honesty in your answering our questions. And we do wish you and everybody that works for LAR all the best as we go forward.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, Anne's left the building, so to speak, and it was great to speak to her and find out more about LAR. It's so encouraging to see a charity making a difference, not only here in Lothian, but across the whole of Scotland. We'll put a link to their website, and the show notes will help you find out more about the charity and the work that they are doing. Thank you for listening today, and I look forward to catching up with you next time.